Hello, welcome to Widnes Rugby Chat, the podcast about all things Widnes Rugby League. I'm James Gordon, I'm joined by Mike Parsons, and today we've got a special guest. He's with us virtually, such is the wonder of modern technology. Rob, otherwise known as Up the Chemics, he's becoming a bit of a internet sensation.
My uncle commented that he's seeing too much of me. So this is adding to that nonsense, right, guys?
Yeah. Can I just say, Rob, it's weird calling you Rob rather than Up the Chemics.
Yeah, I've had a few people shout Up the Chemics at me, and I'm just pleased. Rob is much less uncomfortable. But call me whatever you want. I've been called worse.
Up the Chemics is actually his middle name.
Absolutely. Yeah. Blame your dad for that.
Yeah, so Rob's joined us. We'll do the normal chat about the previous game, about the next game, and all things Widnes, and obviously good to have somebody else in to give their opinions. But Rob, we'll just start first off. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. I know a few people will already know much about you, the nature of your channel, but tell us a little bit about yourself and where Up the Chemics sort of came from.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you the abridged version because I can be known to waffle on a little bit, and we can't be doing that. We've got plenty of witness talk to take up the most of this proceedings. So I started making Up the Chemics content primarily about witness. Then it branched into talking more generally about the Championship, rugby league in general. About the last year or so, I've been dabbling in podcasts and content creation on various different things. I did a running podcast for about 5 years, which was a lot of fun, but it kind of wound down, came to an end. I just had a bit of a creative gap where I just wanted to talk into the ether again. And I just got really back into Widnes a couple of years ago. I was a bit of a stay away fan. I don't live in the town anymore. So I was a bit of a BBC rugby league results on a Sunday and not much else fan for a good few years. And then started going again about 3 years ago, and just fell really hard back in love with it. I don't know if it was, you know, following COVID. I don't know whether it was coming back to the town a little bit more because our kids are getting a bit older now, so they want to go and see grandparents a lot. So we're spending a lot of time in Widnes. I don't know what it was that drove it, but it was just, I was hooked again pretty hard. So it all kind of went hand in hand, and just started making silly videos of me going to an away game, and a few people liked it, so I thought I'll crack on and do it a bit more. And here we are a year later, and it's going all right.
Yeah, sorry, Mike. We've talked a lot, and you started doing the Championship stuff. And me and Mike have talked a lot about the lack of Championship. I did a paper actually for the RFL about 12 months ago regarding the Championship, and I do understand that there are some movements happening behind the scenes at the moment to try and create. You know, Championship's almost like the forgotten little brother of Super League in many ways. Yeah, you know, and I understand why to a point. Super League is the, you know, it's the elite competition. The money comes in primarily through Super League, but the Championship as a competition, it has been neglected, and it has got a lot of positives about it and needs looking after and running properly. And as I say, we'd had the conversation about there's just a dearth of coverage really from anywhere. And so to have, you know, someone do it well and do it properly, it'd actually be quite good for the game, Mike.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Rob, there you were on about you've got young children, and how do they find the content creating first of all, and then secondly, how are they finding the match day experience in and around the Championship at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, it's a slog, isn't it? There's a conversation that you guys had last season, maybe the season before, I can't remember. I was listening into an episode, I think, James, you said about, you know, getting your lad into rugby league and getting him into Widnes and having that real struggle with it, because it's difficult to explain the concept of the league. It's difficult to explain the structure. As soon as he falls in love with a player, he's sent back to his parent club because we only loaned him on a 1 week loan deal. So it's a challenge attracting young people to the game and getting them interested. My two go whether they like it or not. So my eldest, Alex, has got a season ticket. He loves it. He's 17. My middle lad, Harry, is just about getting into it. He's 10. My daughter can't abide it, but we buy her sweets and a pie and she just about tolerates it. So we've got the full range in my household. But I think It is a struggle, and I think it is a reflection of the reality of the landscape, and it's part of the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. And
it does certainly feel that you found a gap in the market, though, doesn't it? That the championship's missing. Like, I know you've obviously done the Widnes stuff, but you've also been out at more traditional clubs like Huntslet as well, doing some content creation for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And the goal is just to sing it about it a little bit more. I think it's a real shame that these clubs, many of whom are institutional parts of the fabric of rugby league, who take part in this division, don't get sung and shouted about enough. And more so as well, not just the players, but also the people that make these clubs run, often on a volunteer basis, giving up so much of their time and effort to just keep alive in a really difficult marketplace at the moment. And, you know, it is a gap in the market. There is nobody talking about it. I'm certainly not perfect, nor am I reaching as many people as I'd like to one day. But if I can champion that division and those people that make it tick as much as possible and shine a good light on Widnes while I'm doing it, then that's pretty much my objective with what I'm trying to achieve at the moment.
Yeah, I think what people get caught up on sometimes, and especially you have that conversation with Super League, everyone's talking about money or what do they add to the game. But ultimately, the bottom line is it's about sport, and the division should exist just so rugby league is played. It doesn't have to be a huge commercially driven thing. And I obviously do a lot in non-league football, yeah. And I don't see why a championship rugby can't be the same as that in terms of it being popular. I think there's a little bit of, I think the nature of rugby league is that because it's been, well, it's called rugby league because there was one league of 30 odd teams for so long. But I think the nature of it is people can't quite differentiate between the full-time clubs and the part-time clubs. It's a bit like, well, no, actually, we should be like just as equal as them. And I think that's possibly what's going to have to, people are going to have to accept that that's what's going to happen in the next few years. And of course, we've said on this podcast a few times, the difficulty for Widnes at the moment is they're sort of stuck in between. They're not quite good enough to be a full-time or big enough to be a full-time club, but then the perception is that they're too big to go with the part-time clubs, with all due respect, like Batley and Dewsbury and teams like that.
That is ultimately the biggest task and challenge I think Widnes find at the moment, that you're chasing this Super League dream almost, but then you're in a part-time league as well. And I really do think it's a critical 2 or 3 years for Widnes to establish what we actually are. Is it a part-time club for the foreseeable future, or is it a team that can catch up to that tail end of the Super League and hopefully one day get back in there? But I do believe that it's going to be a critical couple of years coming up for Widnes.
As we talk about, well, this leads us on to the game, because we talk about a proper championship rugby match, and Halifax against Widnes at the weekend was a proper championship rugby match, as it is at the Shed. I don't know if you've seen my tweet after the game. The last six games between Halifax and Widnes at the Shed, the total points difference across them six games is 11 points.
Yes.
So the total win difference is 11 points. There was the 11-10 yesterday, it was 16-14 the year before, 24-20, 28-26, 9-8, 17-16. Forget all the stuff about TV deals and sponsorship and all that. If you're trying to sell the game to someone or try and convince someone to watch a rugby league match, any one of them six Halifax Widnes games are a great advert for that. We'll bring you in, Rob, on this. What did you think of the game?
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, just to loop around really quickly, in agreement with Mike's point, I just want to kind of add to that by saying I agree that we have to make it kind of draw a line in the sand as to where we want to be as a club. But equally, either side is okay, in my opinion. I get that we want to be in Super League. And I'll prefix this statement by saying I'd love Widnes to be back in Super League. The history, the heritage, the town deserves it. But if the championship as a division is easier to understand, if it's competitive, like we're about to talk about in this Halifax game, and if it has glory and peril and success and risk within it, being a part of something like that is no bad thing either. I think the problem at the moment is where we're sat, like we've said, is in this state of flux, but also where we are is a little bit convoluted. And so it's hard to attract new interest. It's hard to retain people who've maybe moved away from supporting the club and from the game. And so I think if the RFL can get the championship in order, then not being in Super League might not be such a big thing to be so upset about.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before as well, is that they need to make the championship something to be proud of for Absolutely. Those teams who aren't in it. So make the championship worth winning. You know, I think I wrote in the paper last year, I was like, well, because it's the European Super League, could you not just call the championship winners could be the British Rugby League champions? Do you know what I mean? And you know, yeah, everyone knows it's a second tier, but at least make it. And I still think, even if it's a part-time league, I still think that you make it so if you win, the only way to get into Super League is if you win the championship. You know, maybe you get a few years to do that. But I think that's the problem at the moment. The championship's basically like almost like the graveyard for teams who aren't quite big enough to get in Super League, have been in Super League and failed. And it's like, but it needs to be flipped on its head. It needs to be turned, as I say, it needs to be turned into what non-league football has become, where it's almost become this, like, not glamorous, because it isn't glamorous, but it's become this, like, place where people like to go because it's real and it's raw and it's exactly what people, non-league football as an example, is what people fell in love with football for in the first place, that it's now going away from.
Make no mistake about it, for the sport, you're talking not so long ago where the championship had everything. You know, you talk about stories of, you know, Batley that year, them doing the unthinkable, going to the fan. That wasn't that long ago against the elite team. It's a fantastic story. You know, you think back to the days of, you know, the Halliwell Jones and at Headingley, where you'd have the League One grand final and you'd have the championship final. It felt an event and an occasion. You know, the Northern Rail Cup day, some of my best memories as a Widnes supporter. Again, just we have so many examples of great stories in the championship from the recent past. And I think we just need to get back to that. And like you say, like there are levels to every sport, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with having a Super League, and then, like you say, like clubs spending £100,000 and spending within the means, but with live sport, you get close games, you get the structure right, these stories start coming back, and then all of a sudden, then you've got marketable games again that attract interest.
Well, like you mentioned Headingley there, Casford Widnes in 2007 was played in front of 20,000 people. The salary cap that year, I think, was lower than £400,000. The grand final this year will probably be watched by 10% of that crowd. And so you've got to try and step back almost and be like, well, no, actually, if you do it right and you organise it. And I think it's been, you know, I'm not going on an anti-expansionist thing here, but they obviously, the championship sort of has been moulded a little bit to accommodate Toronto, Toulouse, Lee, teams like that, who they got rid of the salary cap because they, and then the Super 8's impact on that. And that had a massive impact on removing what it was before then. But there's no reason, as you say, that we can't get back to just being like, right, it's the championship. I'd probably call it something else, to be perfectly honest, to give it a, you know, something new. But I think that's another debate.
We just have this thing in rugby league, for me, where we almost do it the other way around, where it's like, concentrate on your strengths and what you're good at, where it's almost you're all of the time trying to reach something that you don't have yet. And it's like, Just build on the strength and the structure. It's like the NRL, you know, how many Sydney clubs in and around there are? Will they build off that? You know, the M62 corridor is a strength of our sport.
Well, I think the NRL, from it. The NRL comparison is, how many years did the NRL have the same number of teams? They actually ran with the same number of teams for quite a while. And then Gold Coast went in as an additional team and they ran with that number for quite a while. But then obviously now they've found a sort of way to do it and it's being successful. All of a sudden now they're adding 1, 2, 3 new teams in the last 5 or 6 years. Yeah, I think you're right. But anyway, let's get onto this Halifax game then, Rob. What did you make of it?
There's two conversations, really, isn't there? The first is the game in isolation. Let's forget the ramifications of the things that happened on potentially the rest of Witness's season. We'll touch on that in a moment. Let's look at the 80 minutes. It were brilliant, wasn't it? It were blood and guts, proper rugby league. It was a battle, and it was great fun to watch. It was edge of your seat. Wasn't what I expected. Yes, there were circumstances around it with the injuries that probably gave Halifax more of a leg up in the game than they would have had otherwise. But they were absolutely up for it. They're a big, strong team. They were willing. I thought they were stronger than Widnes in the first 20 minutes. I thought they really gave him a scare even before the injuries. And it was, but Widnes were galvanized in the face of adversity, and they came together. And yes, they struggled over the line at the end, but they got over the line, and it was brilliant. The Dan Murray try was just a moment, and we come back to talking about those moments that can create interest, and that Dan Murray try was a moment that creates interest, and you know, the crowd went crazy, and it was brilliant to watch. I wasn't in the stand because my kids wouldn't stand up for 80 minutes, so I not only watched the try go over, but I also got to watch the stand react to it, which was amazing, and we don't get enough of that in the game. So I thought it was an absolutely brilliant watch. The flip side of that is then you do have to look at the bigger picture and the ramifications of the game, and it is a hammer blow, isn't it? Not just the number of injuries that we've suffered, but equally some of the personnel. You've not got another Matty Farzad in that squad. So I'd go as far as to say that possibly one of the worst players to have lost. When you think about who could come in and maybe do a job, who could maybe step in and fill a gap left by an injury, we haven't got another Fozzie. And I think that's a worry. Equally, the HIAs, I think people oversimplify HIAs sometimes. It's not just the case of these lads are going to be gone for a week and then back. I know that's what happens sometimes, but they've got to get better. Concussion symptoms are horrible to deal with, and there can be complications that keep you out for longer. So there's no guarantee that Max Bandit and Nathan Connell are going to be back for that final in a fortnight's time. So there is a real, we were doing, it was hard enough with the three games in 8 days, with all the things we've had to face into. And now you've got that added on top of it. And it is a bit of a dark spot on what was otherwise a brilliant day out in West Yorkshire.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Joe Edge, after the incident against Hunslet, yeah, he was sidelined, yeah, for a good few weeks as a result of that. So, yeah, I know, I think Connell was going to the hospital for a checkup. I think he's had a concussion before this season. So it's unlikely that they'll be there for the Sheffield game. I think there's conflicting reports on what the protocol is. I think it's 11 days now. But by the sounds of it, for that Sheffield game, I think Alan Coleman's going to try and get in as many other players, if you like, to play in that game, albeit you can only have five or six loan players. But whether that's tallied into the dispensations that are being talked about, who knows? What did you make of the match, Mike?
I echo what Rob says, really. I mean, I was really impressed with Widnes. You know, I thought, considering the challenges that we faced, certainly that forward pack, you know, you had some monumental performances in there. None more so than Dan Murray and Jay Chappellow. Jay Chappellow, what, 75, 76 minutes? Dan going the full distance. Them two players I wouldn't swap with anybody else in the Championship for me. I think they've both been fantastic signings. You know, I wax lyrical about Dan Murray all the time, and I do genuinely believe he's been Alan Coleman's best signing, and it was very fitting that he got that try, you know, what proved to be, you know, the winning moment, of course, the drop goal as well. But I was really impressed with Widnes, how we continued to roll Halifax down the pitch. And I do believe if Nathan Connell had stayed on that pitch, the game would have been a little bit easier for Widnes. I think you could tell, and this isn't a criticism of Mike Butt, because he dealt with everything that come his way 100%. But there was a couple of times where in attack, if that ball had just gone to Jamar Sambo, or to the other wing, to Wincy, you know, we may have scored, you know, a couple more tries, and having that shape in attack, you know, I think would have made the afternoon, you know, a little bit easier for Widnes. I think that was the crucial one, really, that made it, you know, such a contest. You know, having said that, I think Halifax deserve a lot of credit also. You know, last week against Barrow, they named 16 players. They named a winger on the bench. You know, Alfie Johnson scored 4 tries in defeat in that game. They give it a real dig too. And let's not forget, they've been doing it tough as well. It was 2 battered and bruised teams who give it their all. And thankfully, you know, we've come out on the right end of the scoreline. But I'm in total agreement with Rob where if you was to pick a player that you didn't want that to happen to in Matty Fozard, he's probably right up there at the top. You know, middles, you know, you can get some, can't you? You know, somebody to slot in on the wing. Hookers, who's carrying a spare hooker? And one with quality as well. It's not just a position to fill. It's what he does when, you know, when he comes off that bench, Jordan Johnson sets that platform, doesn't he? You know, he hits that first 20 minutes with all he's got, and then Foz comes on, and you can feel the crowd lift when he comes onto that pitch to inject some speed and excitement into the game. And that's a massive blow. And, you know, where you're going to get that from, I'm not sure. And if we're being honest, talking about the final and London Broncos, that's the type of hooker you need on the pitch to get on the front foot yourself. So a hammer blow for Alan Coleman. And listen, I really feel for Al and the club because of how this situation's played out. It's almost sod's law, isn't it, that we've come out of this game with 4-5 injuries.
Yeah, well, before we just chat about that, I just want to say about Dan Murray. So ever since Widnes signed Dan Murray, he's not missed a game. The only one game he's not played in was the North Wales Crusaders game recently. And I know for a fact that he was miffed that he didn't get picked for that game. He was actually on the second longest run of consecutive games across the whole rugby league in this country when he missed that game. So to have played 80 matches or so since he arrived in the manner that he has, you know, massive credit to him for that. Yeah, injuries. Fozard didn't look in a good way. I was in the main stand. You could see by looking at him, he had an anguished look on his face, like he was in pain. And I think that is a massive blow, not just for Widnes, but for Fozard himself. You know, he'll want it to play in the final like everybody else does. It's a good moment. And of course, on the playing side of things, ultimately, if Widnes are to beat London in that 80-95 Cup final, you need your strongest team. It's not just about getting 17 bodies out there to play. It's about getting 17 bodies out there to win.
Yeah,
I think without Martin Fozard, I think that becomes a lot tougher. Let's talk about London's result against Oldham. So Widnes pushed London all the way in the last game. Oldham have then responded to that by beating London. I've seen a few comments saying, oh, London played a weakened team. They didn't. It was London's full team that played, or at least their full available team. I know Murray is out. So Oldham have beaten London. We had a discussion the other week about...
I knew this was coming.
Did we feel that Widnes pushing London would lessen Widnes's chances of winning the final? But does that result for Oldham suggest that, taking aside the injuries, of course, because that's a factor, but does that mean that the final is still doable?
Listen, I still have to stand by what I say. I think what I've seen against London, they're a quality side, and at moments we was hanging on in that game, and let's not make the mistake of we did go down 42-18 at one point, and that was the margin. But there is this thing looming in the air, isn't there, of London Super League. Are they going to make it? Are they not? Do they find out? And that festers, and then all of a sudden these players aren't going to be there next year. There's a lot of narratives flying around, and you know, we clearly rattled London on the day, and that's obviously, you know, had a lasting effect. And, you know, fair play to Oldham. I've seen some of their tries, and, you know, there's some quality pieces of play within that, none more so than Jack Walker. What an outstanding game it looked he had. But absolutely, there's a chance, and Oldham have proved it. They are beatable, and we rocked them at the end. However, you say, let's forget the injuries for a minute. Maybe I'd be sat here differently if we'd come out of that Halifax game with everybody intact. You know, you're talking about not having a fullback potentially. Matty Fozard, in my opinion, one of, if not the best hooker in the comp, not available. Your forward rotation seems to have took a hit as well. and that has to still be factored in for now. And we've still got that Sheffield game to come in between. We could lose more bodies. It's not beyond the realms of impossibility. So I just wish we'd have come out of that Halifax game without them injuries, and I might have had a different opinion of it, James, but I just still see Widnes as a side at the moment. They're just so up against it.
Would you have rather have lost to Halifax and not had the injuries?
No. No. Because I'm all about finishing as high as you can, and I think the 1895 Cup has been a bit of a joke start to finish. If it was a Northern Rail Cup or it was a cup competition that had been put in place and it had prestige, so it had been dealt with professionally and it was something to get excited about. However, if we're all being honest, it has been everything but that, hasn't it?
Witness that the win means that effectively to beat Workington on Sunday, they guaranteed a fifth place finish. The risk would have been, had they lost to Halifax, that you would likely have ended up finishing seventh. Because, well, unless Sheffield don't beat Doncaster, which of course isn't unlikely, but it's not, it'd be put out of your hands, shall we say. If Widnes have lost to Halifax, they could still have made the top six, but only on points difference. And Sheffield could have, in theory, racked up a massive score against Widnes in the last game to try and bridge that gap. So, fifth, with all due respect to Workington, you're expecting Widnes to beat Workington. So fifth would be a decent-ish finish. I think fourth is probably the true reflection because of Newcastle's ridiculous fixture list. So I think Widnes will end the season as a top four team. Rob, what chances do you give Widnes in the 1895 Cup final?
It's tough, isn't it? And it was always going to be tough. I think the one thing that the game in the league against London and the Oldham game in particular this past weekend has maybe exposed a little bit in London is that they're not a particularly battle-hardened side. I think with the exception of those two games and the Challenge Cup game against Bradford and the Doncaster away game, when it was still the Eco Power, I forget what they've changed the name of it to, Doncaster Sports Village, at the start of the season, they've not been run close by anybody. They're in the changing rooms by 50 minutes. So there is an element of, Alan Coleman mentioned it in the post-match interview, about trying to take some positive from that Halifax game, and that being this kind of thing happens and you do sometimes get faced with mounted injuries and you do sometimes get faced with adversity, and coming together as a side is important, and having experience of having your backs up against the wall is important. I don't think this London side have had a lot of that. Now, don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean that the likelihood based on form, squad size, capability is that they're going to blow it away. They're going to blow us away in the first 30 minutes. But if they don't, and if we grind them out, and if we get to 60 minutes still in it, I think we've got much more experience of getting over the line in the last quarter of a game than that London side have. I think there's an element of hope to be taken from that.
I think that's the key for Widnes in the final. There's going to be a 20-minute period where you're going to feel like you've got a hurricane coming at you. In that time period, you've got to limit points. If you can limit the damage within that time period and hold on so it doesn't go to 42-18, it might be just a try ahead, or you can stay ahead. I think that'll be where it's won and lost for Widnes for me.
Yeah, and that's where London have been so devastating, right? When Finlay Glure is at dummy half and Guy Rovaro gets in there as well, and they just roll you. They just move through the play of the ball so quickly, and Championship teams just aren't set up to defend it, I think. And that's where it capitulates and the score just racks up. And teams, frankly, and understandably, this isn't a criticism of anybody in the Championship, they give up because you're just getting absolutely rip-rolled. So Widnes didn't give up in the league game. You know, it was, what was that gap at one point? 20, 22, 24?
Yeah.
And we didn't give up. So there is a bit of hope there, but it's going to be a tough one, isn't it? Let's be honest.
I'm going to put you on the spot here, Rob. Out of a 100%, being 100% witness are going to win. What are witnesses' chances in the percentage for you?
What's the politician's answer to that? No, I'll give you a straight one. an optimistic 50. Look, if it wasn't for the injuries, I'd put it higher than I think you might think I might do. 25, 33, maybe a third, one in three chance at best, I'd say. But it's rugby league, and I've been saying this loads on my content. It's a cup final. It's not a league game. It doesn't matter. Throw the form guide out the window. Who wants it more? Who does it matter to more? There's a lot of these London lads that are already leaving. There's lads that have got NRL contracts for next year. Like you said before, there's uncertainty around the Super League status. Are they going to want to stick around for another year? There's the lads, the three Papua New Guinea lads who've got the developmental contracts for PNG in 2028. Is their mind going to be on 2 years' time rather than what's happening immediately? I don't know in that one-off game, do you?
And I think that kind of draws a circle around that. I think if this London side have a weakness, it's all that uncertainty around the players, around the Super League status, and things like that do fester into mentality. So you don't know. And just to finish up as well, what happened at the Shea on Sunday, yesterday, you know, that could happen to London in the final. And that's where it comes back to, where it is a final. Anything can happen. Anyone can get a red card. You just never know.
Do you think witnesses are going to be hampered a little bit by the uncertainty around the final? Because clearly it being in Warrington is a big advantage for witness, because a lot more people can go. But do you feel like there'll be people who've been hesitant in getting tickets? And so rather than there being maybe 4,000 or 5,000 witness fans there, there's only going to be 2,000 or 3,000. Do you think that's a thing, Rob?
I think it's a risk. I think it's a risk. And that comes back to what we've been saying around the fact that, logistically speaking, the structure of the championship has not been what it needs to be this year, whether that be in the league or in its primary cup competition. I would love to see 5,000 witness fans in that stadium. Whether we will or we won't, I think, is a very big question mark. And that does come down to, are people staying away because it's not been easy to follow and because it's not been easy to keep your eye in on? And I certainly don't feel like there's, I mean, I'm not in the town, so, but I guess that's not the world anymore, is it? Everything's online. So, but I'm not feeling that buzz outside of the usual names and faces and people that I talk to about witness. I'm not feeling that buzz about the casuals coming and getting involved yet, which we need. And the club are going to keep pushing stuff over the next couple of weeks, I'm sure, to try and get there. But yeah, you're absolutely right in calling it. I think there's a question mark over how many we take.
Let's talk about players then. So, just running through the squad. Matt Fleming, we think, is done for the season. Jack Owens will be back because his ban's finished. So,
at least if you're banned, you can't get injured.
Well, yeah, that's that. We think Joe Edge is done for the season with an arm injury. Joe Lyons, who hasn't played at all but has been fit, I do believe, is fit to play. You'd imagine he's going to get a run in one of the next two games. Liam Bennett, I think there's question marks over whether he'll be able to play for the rest of this season. Sam Wild missed the Halifax game through illness, I understand, so fingers crossed that means he'll be all right. Nick Gregson, of course, was 18th man and ended up playing anyway. Lewis Hall, I think, out of the four injuries, was probably the one they were least concerned about in terms of it potentially being a long-term thing. Morgan McWhirt is hoping to be back for the Workington game, so that'll be a boost. That's another body back. Frank Sargent, he's been around. Deacon Connolly, I think they're both available to play, but of course, there's players already playing in their positions. Nathan Wild didn't feature yesterday. I don't think an explanation was given, but you would assume that he's going to be available to witness.
He played, sorry to jump in, James, he played for Leeds Reserves on Saturday, I think.
Yeah, I would imagine that he was probably offered to witness. Maybe witness said no, and that's why he played for the Reserves. But you would think that he's going to play against Workington to get the numbers, because he needs one more game, I think, to be able to feature in the playoffs at the end of the year. So, and then, you know, Max Bandit's been added. He'll obviously miss this Workington game. In terms of the Sheffield game, is the perception, or do you think fans are fine with witness writing it off? So my understanding is, you know, witness aren't going to forfeit the game, because I think the agreement's been made with the RFL that they can't forfeit it, otherwise they won't get the dispensations that have been agreed with London for the final. Are fans going to be happy with whatever in that game? You know, if Widnes rock up with 17 amateurs, if you like, and get 100-0, do you think the fans aren't going to be bothered about that?
I've got to be completely honest with this one, James, and being in and around the town helps with the view that I have as well. I think the fans have been fantastic over the situation, and I think they are really backing the club and the lads over it. I think, you know, it's clear to see all over social media. Don't get me wrong, would anybody want a cricket score? Absolutely not. But I think if that was to happen, a lot of the anger and would be aimed at the RFL rather than to Alan Coleman, Stuart Murphy or anybody like that, and rightly so. I think that Halifax game has come at a cost, because I do believe Alan would have used this Workington game to rotate differently and use the rotation period over the course of three games, rather than it's going to be basically just the Sheffield one now, because we're going to probably have to play whoever we can against Workington. The one positive that I've seen over this situation is I actually think it's galvanised the fans. I think the fans are all on the same page with it and are back in the club. And let's hope come that 1895 Cup final that that helps in the stands. But I think the Sheffield game, for me personally, you know, I think no doubt you just have to do the maths on what's possible. Some players are now going to just have to back up and play, and whether that's the outside backs because they take less contact, whoever it is, I'm not quite sure. That'll be Alan Coleman's decision to make. But for me, you know, you've just got to give it a crack, haven't you? And one thing I will say, if whoever puts on a shirt for Alan Coleman, is they don't give 100% because they do. You know, that is one thing you can say about an Alan Coleman team, is when you're up against it, you dig in. You know,
do you think we'll see a situation where, say, for example, Lions, Sargent, Connolly play Sunday and Thursday and then don't play the final? I mean, with all due respect to them players, they're not first in line for the 17. So do you think we're probably more likely to see that?
Yeah, and your Jack Houghtons will come into that. By the way, Jack Houghton, I thought he had a good crack as well on Sunday. We missed him out. For me personally, you know, not everybody plays the same role in a squad. People are on different amounts of money. And Jack Houghton clearly is a player who comes into your team when, you know, you've got a couple out injured. And he plays that role. And I think every time he's come into the team, he's done a job for Widnes. So if the money's right, I'd be looking to keeping Jack for next year. And I'd rather have a Jack turning out for us than having a million week loans whenever you're short on players. But back to the actual question, yeah, James, I do believe you will be seeing your Frank Sargents, your Connollys, your Jack Houghtons, you know, coming out within these next two games and having to back up.
But do you think anybody gets rested on Sunday? Or do you think, because of the risk of Halifax, then like you say, the problem is if you rest players Sunday, it gives you less options for Thursday in some ways. But ultimately, players are used to playing week after week. So do you think it'll be maybe as close to a normal team as possible on Sunday?
Yeah, I think certainly now with the situation, and let's not forget as well, we need to win this game to cement fifth. So you kind of do that, job done, and then deal with what's in front of you once that final whistle's as blue against Workington. But yeah, if it was me, you might see one or two short-term loans come in, depending who they are. But you know, I do believe it will be a team that is, you know, put out to win the game, get fifth secured, and hopefully, if it all plays out according to plan, you then start, you know, calling people off the field a little bit earlier, and you know, like some of your middles who play longer minutes might, you know, like your Dan Murray's might play half an hour, 40 minutes rather than the 60, 50 minutes that they usually do.
What would you do, Rob? Would you, for instance, not play, say, Tom Gilmore and Jordan Johnston this weekend and try and draft, I mean, Joe Lyons could obviously step up for Tom Gilmore, but do you try and draft a hooker in for this week and just say to Jordan Johnston, right, you're not playing now until the final?
I think there's a balance, isn't there? Because there's also an element of you want players to keep their eye in as well. And in an ideal world, I think Mike alluded to it before, you stagger that rotation over a 3-game period. Everyone gets minutes, everyone keeps fresh at the same time, and you've then got a bigger pool of battle-hardened, battle-ready players to choose from. I think it's all circumstantial. You could absolutely rest a halfback to give Joe Lyons some game time. Why not? He works his socks off every time he pulls on a Widnes shirt. Against the likes of Workington, he can absolutely be effective and do a job, even coming back from an injury layoff. With Jordan Johnson, slightly different, isn't it? Like you alluded to then, who do we bring in? Because there is a counterbalance to that argument as well, which is maybe you're not doing it to rest JJ. Maybe you're doing it because you've brought somebody in. And a dummy half such an important position in that side. You need to give them opportunity and experience of running the plays and getting the hands on the ball and being in and around the players and getting up to match fitness. Because let's face it, we're unlikely to pick up someone who's been playing regular first grade rugby league, are we?
So
the argument isn't necessarily does JJ need a rest, it's does whoever's going to come in for Fozzie need minutes.
Well, I think my position on Johnston is if he don't, you know, you're not, you know, you could get in by a bus tomorrow, do you know what I mean? But if he gets injured, Widnes have basically got nothing for the final.
He is the one, isn't he, that you've got to wrap in cotton wool, but it's how you manage it, isn't it? Like how I would approach it is, if you are doing a job against Workington, he's the first one that gets pulled off the pitch. Do you know what I mean? But with in mind that you've got enough to get the job done, that'd be my approach. And there'd be probably a couple of other players like your Dan Murrays who fall into that category as well. But there's also that element as a coach and a performance team that Alan will be looking at is, you know, you don't want to be going into that London game cold either. You know, your players...
Especially having just had a week off as well.
Absolutely. You know, there is that angle of you need your players going in fit, firing, and, you know, in the combinations are fluent as well, not rusty. So there's that as well. I do not envy Alan Coleman over these next 2 weeks, I'll tell you that.
Well, Rob's been drafted in to help market this Workington game. I see he's got a very fancy front door, actually, on that video.
Oh, dear me, that wasn't good, was it?
Tell us a little bit about that, Rob.
Do you know what? The club have been in touch with me a couple of times to ask if I can do some bits, whether it's on my channel or collaboration stuff. And I'll always do it. It's not necessarily the most comfortable thing in the world, as you could probably tell by my slightly wooden acting in the video that got released tonight. But it's good fun at the same time. And I do think it's a reflection of the club trying to move into a new space in terms of marketing. You know, without going too deep into that side of things, there is a not just Widnes. I think one thing I've noticed since I've started making content, Championship rugby league clubs, even Super League clubs in general, maybe aren't at the forefront of the world in terms of how you build a brand for your team and for the players that play for that team. It markets to its current audience. We see a lot of static graphics. We see a lot of blurb posts on Facebook. We do have rugby league in general tends to have an older fan base, and it struggles to attract new people, but it self capitulates because it's creating content to appeal to its current fan base, which young people who might want to get into the game and might get their heads turned away from watching football or whatever it is they're doing elsewhere, it doesn't get them involved. So look, it's baby steps, and just getting an idiot in to open a fake birthday card isn't gonna suddenly make Widnes at the forefront of social media revolutions, but it's Widnes making an effort to say we need to look at different strategies and not just have one single point of delivery for content. I think that's where you see success in branding. It is having people who are technically independent to your organization who are talking about it, because everything's just got to hit the algorithm, and people will talk about, you know, oh, there's strategies and keywords and things you need to say at the start of a video and, you know, ways you need to frame it and times of the day to post. But a lot of it comes down to luck, and it's about hitting the algorithm at the right time and it getting pushed out into people's phones. And if you're doing that from one single point, one single account, one single brand, you are limiting yourself. And so I think, again, I hope that what Witness are doing with me is a reflection of hopefully the club's openness to trying to explore new avenues. And it's not instead of the stuff they're doing at the moment and how they communicate to fans via social media. It's in addition to, and it's all about brand build.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, I've been sort of, conflicted in some ways over the last few months, because obviously I've been helping the club out with a few bits, but I'm probably of the same opinion as you that I'm probably better for the club being outside the club than I am inside the club, because I think when you're inside, you've got to play straight back to a point. You know, I work for a lot of different organisations where there's a different approach to when you're doing something inside the club than when you're outside and covering it objectively. And I do think that, like you say, I think clubs need to do the basics. I think there's still too many clubs who aren't even doing the basics, to be perfectly honest. But like you say, having more people on the outside making noise about it and talking about it is going to attract people. I think one club that's done really well at this is Lee, actually. So,
yeah, 100%.
I did a video at Lee. I think it was last year sometime. I mean, I've got a TikTok account, but I have no, I'm too old for that. You know, I have no idea what I'm doing. But I did a video, and one of the videos that I did that had 20,000 views or something was at a Lee game, and I was astounded by the number of people who were liking that video, who had like a Lee Leopards. They were obviously Lee fans, but young, like Lee fans. You know, you could see that there'd been some noise created around Lee with their brand and stuff that had actually engaged like a whole new generation of people. And that's why they're getting 9,000. Now, the only caveat to that at the moment is, and I think I said this again last week, the problem for Widnes at the moment is that as much as I think there are areas Widnes should be doing things better, ultimately the environment around them, i.e. the Championship, just isn't geared up for, I don't know what you think of that, Rob, but it isn't geared up almost for, yeah, you can do all this marketing stuff and this extra stuff, but you're going to hit them same road bumps that we've talked about in terms of, well, what's the point? What's the structure? Who are you playing?
Well, that's the hard thing at the moment, isn't it? It's what story are you actually selling? That's part of the problem. But I think testament to Rob and the work you do, mate, I think as well, you know, Tim Holmes, what he was trying to do at Widnes. We are growing up in a digital world where kids are growing up with TikTok. I'm the same as you, James. I'm trying to get into TikTok. It's not quite my...
I'm giving it a go.
But kids are growing up with that. It's all reels now, isn't it? It, you know, and you have to move with the times. And, you know, certainly for Widnes, concentrating on us rather than the rest of the Championship, because there are some teams out there, you know, that the fan base, you know, it is 60, 50 plus. Widnes, if you are still chasing this Super League dream eventually one day, you have to, and it is the most important thing, is staying in touch with your younger generation and your younger fans that are coming through. And you've got to grip them people, and, you know, the TikToks, the reels, the videos, that is how you captivate them in this new world that we are in. And like people like Rob, Tim Holmes, and other people out there creating content as well, it is so, so valuable.
I was thinking this yesterday at the game, and I wasn't going to actually talk about this today, but I've been to, I don't know, 30 Halifax Widnes games, let's say. And, yeah, I can remember a time when Widnes had one end and Halifax had the other end, and, you know, there was a decent-sized crowd in. And it got me thinking, like, well, why isn't that the case anymore? And I think we talk about stories, and I still think there's legs. I know that rugby league gets criticised because of where it is, and, you know, but I still think there's a lot of legs in selling the story of the heritage of it all.
I agree.
So although, even if you're young in Halifax or Widnes or whatever, selling the story that this town that I live in or that I am from has got this 100-plus-year heritage in this sport that's only played in a small area but has lasted this long because it was set up because of this, because we had an industry that required it.
Yeah.
I still think that rugby league misses a massive opportunity in not selling that, because I think the perception is that, oh, well, it's flat capping and it's this. But I just think that you look at this, that to get someone to support a Halifax or a Widnes, there's got to be an element of that civic pride to go and watch them. Because if it's all about the bells and whistles and the fireworks and the whoever, you'll just go and watch Sterling's, or you'll go up the road and watch the bigger clubs. But the clubs that are in the...
Sorry, James. It comes full circle to the point you were making before about non-league football. There is a growing appetite amongst particularly young people. There's also people of kind of our generation that are maybe getting a bit disenfranchised with elite football, let's say, as an example. You know, I'm the same. I grew up in Widnes. We didn't have a football team. Arthur Town supported Liverpool. Arthur Town supported Man United. We all know that story growing up in the 90s, right? So I've been a Man United fan, and I'm a pretty big United fan. And I go a couple of times a season. My eldest lad likes to go. But I don't have that connection to Manchester United. No matter how much I watch them, no matter how much I talk about them, my connection to that football club starts and ends at football, right? It starts and ends at what they do on the pitch, because I don't have a connection to Manchester, apart from the fact that I've been drunk in it quite a few times in my life, right? I've got a connection to Widnes. I grew up here. Yeah, my family grew up here. My family are a part of this club. My uncle is a huge part of the club. He's got a box. He sponsors players. My granddad buried in a Widnes scarf. I know I've done that video that went a little bit viral about it. My grandma, great story about my grandma having to be taken off the pitch, carried off the pitch because her arthritis kicked in on a Boxing Day game, but she refused to not go. So she had to be carted out because she'd frozen stiff as a board. Widnes is embedded into who I am. And we're only a generation removed. So if we can tell those stories to our young people now through all these different methods and all these different techniques and this world of 2026, but it all starts with conversation. It all starts with me boring the snot out of my children because I'm telling them about stories my dad told me about Joe Lydon running length for Wembley twice in 1984. But they're the same stories time and time again, but they matter. And if you can get that connection with people, then you're on to a winner. Widnes is important and the club is important. And if we can sing about that a little bit more, there's no reason why this club can't continue to succeed and grow.
I just to caveat what Rob says there, I think, you know, the best part of our club is our rich history, heritage. You know, we're lucky to support a club that has been to so many finals, that has existed for so long. And you are right, James, it should be celebrated, championed and built on for the new generation to understand, because it is an institution. It is.
Well, I think we've covered a few bits there, so we'll sign off this week. Rob, thanks very much for joining us. Hopefully we'll have you back soon. Hopefully you'll get Mike on one of your TikToks at some point. And I should say, if the club are looking for any more idiots to help with the marketing, I've got Mike's number. So
like Chuckle
Brothers. It's a big, isn't it?
We'll get you dancing, Mike, eh?
Yeah. Rob will have me doing something.
But yeah, thanks as always for listening. Do check us out on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. You can leave a review, give us a rating, or if you want to reach out to us via the Widnes Rugby League Fans Facebook page or via X or Twitter, whatever we're calling it, with your questions or anything you'd like to see on future podcasts, please do that. But for now, from myself, Mike, and Rob, we will see you next time.